All right, good to be with you. You can text the show if you're up with us this morning, listening to the show, let us know. 713-572-4610. Astros have been so up and down this year. This is a text. Played well against good teams, played down to the competition. They can maintain the level of play from this 17-game stretch over the next 2 weeks. I'll feel much more optimistic. That's from Travis. They've got a patch of schedule that's conducive to that coming up.
The craziest thing, you know, we talked earlier about, obviously, if you'd had good production out of your cleanup hitter all season long, mostly Christian Walker, could be a much different story right now. I mean, the other big...
Even slightly below average production from him. He's been abysmal.
The other big what if is just, if what if they were just average hitting with the bases loaded? I mean, they're so bad with the bases loaded. They're the worst team in the league with the bases loaded. They entered yesterday as the worst team in the league with the bases loaded, and then they ended two innings with the bases loaded. Right? If you would have just been, if you would have been in the 30th percentile at least, that's a few more wins right there.
Yep, no doubt.
Some more glorious walk offs and what have you.
Thank you. Yeah. So it's Look, the pitching staff is still, the starting rotation is still going to be heavily a work in progress here as they move forward. But again, they're playing the next 20 or 25 games are not against world beaters. You know, if they, I'm with you. If they maintain this level of play, you know, let's say next 25 games, you know, if they go, they can go 16 and, you know, 16 and 9, 15 and 10, something like that easily over these next 25 games for sure.
Altuve ends up with 8 hits in this series, and we had put him out of the circle of trust right before this series began, and he may very well be out of his slump. The Altuve being back,
you're welcome.
To himself,
you're welcome, Houston.
Yes,
okay.
You're welcome, Houston.
Thanks
you're
for
welcome,
all the flowers.
Jose Altuve.
Yeah.
So Yordan Alvarez is the next one. The things that it's okay to wish for is, okay, can we get normal Yordan and normal Altuve?
Yep.
And that, so far, it looks good so far with Altuve. It's just a matter of Yordan. Hopefully his hand was the big reason behind that extended slump, the longest slump he's had in his career.
Yeah, and again, this is my request to the internet. I don't need to see any more videos of Yordan running the bases as if that means squat to me. Like, hey, here's Yordan coming back from his hand injury running the base. Unless he's crab walking around the bases, then I'm interested.
If he's doing a bear crawl.
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh, crab walk, yeah. Bear crawl's safer at least.
Yeah. Either one. Any form of getting around the bases that involves using his hands, a handstand, if he wants to handstand his way around the bases, or cartwheel, if he wants to do a series of cartwheels around the bases, then I will take that as something that would indicate he's coming back soon. Until then, I don't give a crap about him running the bases at all.
If I saw a video of him doing the pommel horse, I'd be like, okay. He is ready to go.
They put a pommel horse at each base, and he has to jettison himself over them like a gymnast. Mm-hmm. Then I'll be like, okay, the hand looks good. But him jogging around the bases, put it this way, if that at all is affecting his hand, like if he's now able to run without pain, then I'm going to be like, okay, well, then it must have been a pretty damn severe hand injury.
That was a milestone that they were looking for. Right, yeah, I wonder, I am mildly disappointed that, you know, last weekend or so, I started thinking, okay, by next weekend, by Memorial Day weekend, surely Yordan will be back out there.
Yeah.
And now I'm just put back into, I don't know, man. Like, whatever. Whenever he shows up, Kyle Tucker mode of, okay, whenever he shows up, he shows up.
I think it's going to be he shows up, and they've already said he's not going to do a rehab stint. Like, Yordan's a guy that doesn't need to get his timing back. Like, he's a guy who picks up a bat, and he just starts hitting again. And I'm sure he's doing plenty of swinging the bat in the cage and whatnot, trying to get some semblance of timing back. But I think it's going to be one of those things, Seth. Like, we're going to see a tweet from one of the people that covers the team, Brian McTaggart, Chandler Rome, Matt Kawahara, probably all three of them at the same time, would have been Mark Berman back in the day, that says Yordan Alvarez is being taken off the IL and he'll be batting third that night or batting fourth that night in the lineup. I think it's going to be one of those things. Like, as soon as we find out, he's back in the lineup again. Someone makes a good suggestion. If Altuve plays like this outside of the circle of trust, maybe keep him out?
Keep him out. Oh,
LOL.
Boy.
Yeah.
I don't know. That feels... Whenever we try to get too clever with it, it feels like it blows up in our face.
Well, that's true. That's also somebody who probably doesn't realize how painful it was to leave him out of that circle of trust.
Yeah, it's really, really hard
that
on
hurt.
Us.
Yes.
If you want the circle of trust to continue, then you got to make some concessions for the fact that Sean and I are human, damn it.
We have emotions. We cry. We bleed.
Yeah.
Okay?
You can't just keep sending us back out there to the front every damn night.
That's it.
All right. Yeah. Need some R&R at some point.
We need some load management.
Yeah.
All right. So Bill Barnwell does this piece, you know, this time of year. It's graduation. It's, you know, yearbook signings and things like that. Superlatives for each of the AFC teams. Bill Barnwell, ESPN, and lengthy NFL writer, writes long articles, but they're good. Superlative for the Texans. Most likely to apologize with a flurry of gifts.
What the hell's that supposed to mean?
Okay, well, let's see what kind of shade this is. All right, here we go.
What high school did he go to?
The Texan. I know, that's a weird superlative. I feel like Barnwell might have won that at some point. That's why he's putting it in there. The Texans have gotten C.J. Stroud a card, I suppose, but after getting their star, meaning a greeting card, but after getting their star quarterback battered throughout the season before eventually getting injured in last season's divisional round loss to the Chiefs, an apology. Oh, remember that game, Seth, where he's limping around out there against the, remember the, I mean, I know you remember the playoff game.
Yeah.
I had forgotten that he was, I had forgotten.
Being helped to the sideline.
Yes, I had forgotten that at some point I'm like, man, it doesn't even matter if they win this game. He's going to be gimpy as hell when they go up to Buffalo next week. Barnwell continues, they simply couldn't protect C.J. Stroud. Though quarterbacks have a meaningful influence on their own pressure and sack rate, Stroud was pressured within 2.5 seconds on more than 18% of his dropbacks. The only other starters who were pressured within 2.5 seconds more often were Drake May, Kirk Cousins, and Geno Smith. Barnwell goes on to talk about how they cleaned out the Tunsil Mason Green dynamic in there, and they brought in a bunch of new guys. They've got 9 guys now, all of whom you could viably make a case for to be among the 5 starting offensive linemen for this team.
Yeah.
So you bring in a bunch of gifts for C.J.
They brought in, I guess the difference, too, is when you compare it to the strategy of the Bears and the Vikings, who had offensive line issues but were way more aggressive about going out and signing guys. They got named free agents. Yeah. The Texans, they shopped in bulk, I think is how Barnwell put it. And they got a lot of guys that are competitive and could be starting on a lot of teams, but they're not necessarily anything that gets you super excited about, oh, yeah, that guy's going to change or transform things.
Yeah,
I think that – and this can blow up. This can go in many different directions. But I do think that the Texans looked at it as more of an issue about the offensive line in total – including Bobby Slowick and his scheming, that there was more to be done than just bring in better players, that you had to tear this thing down to the studs and then start rebuilding. And they're in the infancy of that, and it's going to, like, if it doesn't work out, it's going to be obvious why it didn't, because you didn't do these same aggressive moves. If it does work out, then it's because, yeah, they actually fix things systemically.
Yeah.
And even though they don't have as many individually named players, that as a group they operate a lot better.
Bears actually.
So I applaud the theory and the strategy,
yes,
but you got to pull it off now too.
Yep, the spirit is there. I get that. The Bears actually signed Tooney to an extension this weekend. He was in his contract year. They gave him 2 more years, I think, at 17, 18
Joe
million.
Joe Tooney came over from Kansas City.
Chicago. Yeah. So there's that.
His superlative, most team to end up with a flurry of gifts,
yeah,
is that they're going to go out and spend to get more assets for CJ.
I think his contention here is that these offensive linemen are the gifts that he's getting. I think, you know, that he's, he doesn't mention the receivers they drafted and the running back they drafted and the offensive lineman they drafted and getting Christian Kirk. They've done a lot of things. They have turned over a lot on that side
of the
ball.
Okay, I see.
You know?
So their surprise for this offseason is that, hey, they apologized with a flurry of gifts.
With a flurry of gifts, yeah. With a flurry.
But I guess, yeah, but the gifts were just kind of not as
tantalizing. We'll see. Yeah.
In free agency, at least.
Thanks.
You go out and you draft 2 wide receivers and draft an offensive lineman. That's helping, theoretically helping the offense out. They just got to work out.
Yep, absolutely. We'll have this audio in the 9 o'clock hour. I forgot to send it to Ben over the weekend. Rob Ninkovich was out there again on either a radio show or a podcast, Seth, just lauding to the moon and back on Cole Popovich again, Texans offensive line coach. Well, because Ninkovich was in New England when they let Popovich go over, you know, some vaccination COVID stuff in 2020. And Popovich, as Ninkovich, he makes the point, we'll have it later in the show, but he's a student of Dante Scarnecchia, who's considered, you know, one of, if not the greatest offensive line coach of all time.
Yeah. So he's done that a couple times now.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was Cole Popovich? Just he didn't want to get vaccinated.
Yes.
So he ended up, he coached at high school or the college where he could for a year, whatever. There was a year where he was out of the league.
Franklin High School. He was at Franklin High School in Franklin, Massachusetts for a year. Then he went to Troy, and then he was with the Texans in 2023, and now he's the offensive. I don't think this is hyperbole. He's one of the most pivotal guys in that building for this upcoming season. Yeah. I'm not being hyperbolic by saying that. Like Cole Popovich is supremely important.
The Nick Caley being able to actually design a run game, and then Cole Popovich being able to coach it. I think just from the way that the team talked about it in measured doses, you know, this offseason, it does sound like there was a disconnect between Bobby Slowick and Chris Strausser.
Yeah.
And that whose fault it was, you know, how could it have changed? I don't know. But they didn't think Bobby Slowick was the guy to fix it.
Yeah.
Caley and Popovich have a prior relationship. I'm guessing that at the very least, they're going to have a better working relationship and be on the same page more so than Slowick and Strausser were.
It's funny, along those lines, Nick Shook of NFL.com had an article late last week that he listed the top departures that are going to impact NFL teams. You know, teams lose a guy, and that's going to have a big impact because he's not there anymore. C.J. Gardner-Johnson was on the list, which is interesting. I'll get to that in a second. I thought it was interesting that Laremy Tunsil was not on this list. Nick Shook, I don't know if it's disrespect. I just found it intriguing. As highly criticized as the Texans were, not by everybody, but by, like, outside of Houston, I don't know if I can think of a Texans move that's been made since I've been covering the team, Seth, for the last however many years, 15, 18 years, whatever it is, that had a greater disparity between how it was viewed in Houston and how it was viewed out of Houston than the Laremy Tunsil trade. And I just find this interesting that Nick Shook is not a Houston guy. He's a national NFL.com guy, and he doesn't have Laremy Tunsil on this list. He's got about 10 guys on here. He's got Dante Fowler is on here.
Yeah.
Carlton Davis, the cornerback, is on here for the Lions. Had a great game against the Texans. Rico Dowdle is on this list, the running back for the Cowboys. He's a journeyman running back for the Cowboys. Laremy Tunsil is nowhere to be found on this list in terms of his former team missing him.
There is a little bit. I started to hear here and there on podcasts and in articles, you know, people bringing up like, well, you know, you do have to think, the guy's a premier pass protector who's been traded twice in his career. Usually teams really do. That's the one last thing they will not relinquish. If you're the Browns, you're not going to let go of Joe Thomas because at least you've got that. And,
especially if you have a star quarterback who's a pocket guy.
The fact that he's been traded twice, I think people have realized, like, okay, well, there's a gap there. There's a gap between some of his PFF grades and maybe how the team feels about
it. I'm guessing, too, like people from the team, whether it's Nick Caserio or D'Amico Ryans or maybe other people. I mean, there's this whole network around the league with people that talk to various reporters. I think a lot of that criticism came in the few days after the trade, and I'm guessing there were some private conversations had about, like, hey, here's why we did it. Explained it, and then once you explain it to a few of the big voices out there, and they're telling, I mean, it's like it's a viral thing, you know. You get the explanation out there, and you know, that's kind of how it goes. Here's what they said about C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Of course, his former team is the Philadelphia Eagles, and Nick Shook says Gardner-Johnson's not played for the same team in consecutive years since 2020 and 2021. That is worth noting.
And people bring that up too. I don't know. There's something going on. Yeah.
Now the Eagles brought him back, so he wasn't toxic enough for them to not. I'm not saying he's toxic at all. He's got an interesting back of the football card in terms of where the chronology of where he's worked. But he helped the Eagles win a Super Bowl. This is Shook talking now. Last season in his second stint with the team, fresh off a title, Philly traded him to the Texans with budgetary concerns in mind. Moves like that one can help the Eagles remain competitive, but such deals only work if the replacements produce. Enter Texas product on Andrew Mukaba, who's a safety they took in the second round. He's going to be asked to step in and fill the void right away. Might be. It will be no easy task, even on a talented defense. Meanwhile, Gardner-Johnson will aim to follow up a career-best season with a stellar campaign as a member of the Texans, where he's joining one of the best secondaries in the NFL. I think that's the big thing to note here. Like, C.J. Gardner-Johnson is coming off a hell of a season in Philly.
He had a great year last year. Philly's looking at it a little bit, I think, the way the Chiefs do with their defensive backs, is that you look at what Philadelphia did with two rookie defensive backs this past year that they just probably feel really good in their ability to get the absolute most out of guys. They're like the Astros with their pitchers. Like, all right, we'll just develop another one. Okay, yeah, this guy did some good things for us, but we'll develop another one.
Yeah, then they'll get Tommy John surgery, and we'll find more of them after that. Yeah.
Yeah.
This would be like if it was the Astros thing, but all the DBs wound up with ACLs at the end of their stint, ACL surgery. So Tunsil not on there. Diggs isn't on this list either, which isn't surprising because he only played half the season for the Texans last year. But I feel like if he had played the full season at the level he was playing the 8 games he played, I mean, they were 6-2 in the 8 games Stephon Diggs played, he would have been on this list.
Well, no, and CJ took a notable dip specifically when Stephon Diggs went out. You look at his first half of the season, Stephon Diggs played 8 games, and then the last 9 games. With CJ without that quick outlet and with that guy that he could make those really tight window throws to, it just made the pass protection issues become that much more of an issue. And it wasn't, yeah, it was a different offense without Diggs in it.
Who is that this year? Is it Kirk? Who's the quick outlet guy?
I don't know if they're, I mean, I don't, yes, it needs to be Kirk or Jalen Noel.
Yeah.
I don't know if they can do it at the level of Stephon Diggs, right. But that element was gone once Diggs was out there. And so Christian Kirk, yes, but I don't expect or need him to be as good as Stephon Diggs.
If you could bring back one, and this may be a trickier question now because they went and drafted a bunch of receivers and signed receivers and whatnot. If you could bring back one of Diggs or Tunsil, who would it be?
Diggs.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think Diggs was more of a swarm mindset guy.
Well, that's definitely the case. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that he fit the culture of what they want, the culture that they have on defense. Diggs fits into that culture, whereas Laremy Tunsil doesn't. If you had to invite everybody to a defensive swarm party, they're gonna choose Stephon Diggs, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Because these are the athletes themselves. They're not like other people who can be bought off so quickly.
Diggs is more swarmy than Laremy Tunsil. There's no question about that. I'm just thinking about the party element to it. If you have a party with too many, I feel like if it's a party, you need at least a few guys that are kind of chill in the whole thing, you know, like otherwise
not in a swarm party. The swarm party is going to get out of control, Sean. Okay. Yeah, that's the whole thing. Adults present and officials on the field, it's a melee.
It's not just
I'm not expecting like everybody to come out of this party alive, Sean.
Gotcha.
But you got to be invited to the party to not survive.
I got
it.
You that no that makes sense. I was just looking at your garden variety party. You're making this an actual party where swarm is the theme of this thing. Okay.
Yeah, this is a Netflix series.
Yeah. It won't last long. Not many episodes. Everybody dies. That's the
No, you parse it out.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
two
yeah.
main characters per season.
Yep. Yep.
I believe you're serious about it.
Who
as
wins
a showrunner?
Who wins a swarm party among the Texans? If you had a swarm party and it's basically, because it sounds like it's basically Thunderdome.
It's like who's the last man standing?
Yes, who's the last
the
man
the swarm
standing?
Party? Probably Aziz.
You think?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, I think Aziz has something in him that even after he's had two of his limbs severed, he's still fighting.
I feel like he's a survivor. That's a good pick by you right there, I think. I was going to say, just based purely on the optics, Danielle Hunter. But you know I get wrapped up in height, weight, speed, you know.
Danielle and Will would both get duped into doing the right thing at some point.
Yeah.
If this is last man standing, at some point you're going to be able to convince Will that, like, hey, man, hey, I've got kids and you don't. And Will will say, oh, dog, you're right, man. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was being selfish.
This is like a version
Strike
of Survivor.
Strike me with that mace.
This is like a version of Survivor. I kind of like this. Hey, by the way, they're announcing.
No, Danielle and Will Hunter both. Ultimately, their gentlemanly dispositions would do them in.
Yep. Aziz. I think Kamari Lassiter would do well in that environment.
Oh, boy, that's a big wild card right there.
Yeah.
Because Kamari's got more of the crazy eyes.
Yes. Slapping the head and everything, you know?
Yeah, Aziz, it's more cold and calculating, whereas... Yeah. So Kamari, I think that he might wear himself out, though.
I feel like this is a power ranking we need to do at some point. This is almost like a version of the Circle of Swarm, but it's Circle of Swarm deathmatch is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All rules of society break down.
That's right. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Aaron Rodgers gave some clarity on his situation right now. Why is he not signed with a team? He did that on Joe Rogan's podcast. Meanwhile, his ex-girlfriend, Danica Patrick, was on Sage Steele's podcast.
Ow,
dishing,
that was a, this was, yeah.
Dish, this is good stuff. Dishing on what kind of boyfriend Aaron Rodgers was. Drama coming up next. Thank you. Thank you very, very much, for sure. Text in 713-572-4610 if you're up listening with us, if you're on holiday today, if you got some good stuff planned, let us know. 713-572-4610. Aaron Rodgers, I would say Aaron Rodgers is one of the still kind of dangling storylines here for the offseason, Seth. Where is he? Is he going to come back? If so, is it with the Steelers? That would appear to be the case. He provided some clarity. I don't have the audio for this, but we do have some audio related to Aaron Rodgers here in a moment. But he went on Joe Rogan's podcast and revealed that multiple people in his inner circle are dealing with cancer. He hadn't specified about that. He'd said, I think on McAfee, he had said, you know, that he had some people close to him that had been dealing with some things, and that's prevented him, or that's kept him from, you know, going and throwing himself back into football. He didn't say who. He didn't say how many people. He just said multiple people in his inner circle are dealing with cancer right now. So that was the that's what he's got going on. Now, Ian O'Connor, who is the author of the biography for Aaron Rodgers, the recent book that was put out on him within the last year or so, thinks that Aaron Rodgers has a wink-wink with the Steelers. That he's got a...
Is that his, is that just his suspicion, or is that what he, that's not a sourced report?
No, I think it's just a suspicion that he has, but he's close to Rodgers to some degree, you know, wrote a book.
That's what it does feel like, and given the Steelers, you know, relative complacency over the quarterback position, turning down opportunities to go get either multiple different guys through trade or in the draft. If I'm a Steelers fan, I'm guessing a Steelers fan is getting pretty frustrated with it. Man, so what we're doing is we're holding out hope for a guy who hasn't been himself in multiple seasons now, and that right now has issues in his personal life that he's putting the team on hold, I know this sounds callous and cold-hearted, but the way I always look at it is, man, yes, it's, you know what, it's great for Aaron Rodgers, the person, that he can focus on the people who are close to him.
Yep.
In terms of just a hungry athlete who might be 28 years old and have issues in his personal life, but he compartmentalizes it and still does the football side of things, like, there's a big difference between a 40-year-old guy who's still coming off a torn Achilles tendon, hasn't played like himself, and you're just waiting for him to show up.
Yeah.
I don't really care about the details interpersonally. It's like, that guy's not in the same spot as I want my quarterback to be.
Well,
going into the offseason.
Totally.
For a new team.
And the plan B for Pittsburgh ain't great. Like, their quarterback room is Mason Rudolph and Skylar Thompson and Will Howard, the quarterback from Ohio State. So, it ain't good, man.
Is after several years of just kind of kicking the can down the road at quarterback
all the time.
That it's odd, man. This is that moment where everything that you laud about the Steelers, like, wow, they never have a losing season. It's amazing. You start to wonder, as a Steelers fan, all right, well, what are we really like? Are we trying to be in the hall of slightly above average? Is that what our existence is going to be? Because it sure feels like you're cool with going 500. And being in the playoff conversation.
In the playoff conversation, or actually in the playoffs, but not winning games. They won a playoff game since 2016. 10 years, you know? All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. So this is the other Aaron Rodgers thing. This was big this weekend. This crossed over into the non-football world. Danica Patrick, of course, for about 2.5 years, dated Aaron Rodgers. She was on Sage Steele's podcast this past week and was asked, what was the most pain that you've experienced?
What's the most amount of pain you've experienced?
The breakup with Aaron in 2020.
Yeah. Why?
Because it was sudden. It felt like it was my life. So, like, you know, when you live with somebody and, you know, like, it's your whole life, you know, it's your dentist appointment, it's your hairdo, it's your, that's like your clothes, it's your mailing address, it's like everything. And because the nature of the relationship was emotionally abusive, so that will, like, wore me down to nothing. Someone that, you know, people could never imagine that I would lack complete any confidence or belief in the simple things about who I am. Like, everything was torn to bits. And, he leaves a trail of blood. I don't think I'm saying too much, you know, earth shattering stuff after we've, you know, there's been enough out there.
All right.
Yeah. What's out there?
Trail of blood.
What did she just confirm?
Trail of blood.
Yeah. Boy, that was the trail of blood part. At first, I was wondering because she kind of said it was an emotionally abusive relationship. And at first, I didn't know if she meant that it was like emotional turmoil, that it was both of them or whatever. By the end of it, I feel like she left no doubt that she just feels like Aaron Rodgers was a monster to her, emotionally at least.
Yeah. Now, Aaron Rodgers.
It honestly does surprise me a little bit. I know he's kind of a weird dude.
Yeah.
But it's not like Danica Patrick is, you know, some young person out trying to get clout on social media.
No. I think it's probably legit.
I feel like Danica Patrick's not, she's not one to just go out there and toss around insults because it's good for ratings.
I was just jotting down as she was talking. I was jotting down, like, all right, what does the trail of blood look like for Aaron Rodgers? Like, who's in the Aaron Rodgers trail of blood?
Go ahead.
Here's what I jotted down. Here's what I jotted down. You tell me. His family, like, he's disassociated himself from his family. I don't know who's at fault there, but I think it's, you know, it's there may be a trail of somebody's blood. Mm-hmm. I think not only the two NFL teams he's been on probably feel that way a little bit, especially the Jets. The Jets, for sure, they moved on. You know, the Packers.
Well, the Packers, though, that was a longer relationship, and it was really just him like really severing ties over the last couple. It was a long, jagged breakup.
Yeah. But I think there's definitely trail of blood with both of those teams, just different types of trail. I'll throw one in here, the Denver Broncos. Remember the Broncos thought they were getting Aaron Rodgers to the extent that they hired Nathaniel Hackett to be their head coach. I think the Broncos are in the trail of blood. I think, you know who I think is?
They got desperate for Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
Because the Aaron Rodgers plans fell through.
I guess I wrote Devontae Adams' name down only because he got sucked into the vortex of the New York Jets at the end of last year. But he was with the Raiders before that. It's not like that was a great scenario.
But he's been sucked into the vortex of Aaron Rodgers where maybe he's making decisions based on going, oh, yeah, it'll be me and him with the Jets and it'll be awesome. But just like old times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Remember he popped up behind him on McAfee's show, they just gotten over on the entire football universe. Like, hey.
He doesn't realize he's being emotionally abused yet. He's still in the thick of it. He's still making excuses for his abuser. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm writing down other, you know, who are the other relationships? What, Olivia Munn he dated for a little while? There was there was the woman he dated most recently who just didn't like football. She didn't hate football, but she wasn't a big sports fan. I don't remember her name. I think they broke up, though, recently, too.
It's Posh Spice, I think, is what it was.
It was Posh Spice. It wasn't Posh Spice.
That's David Beckham's wife. She's not a football fan either.
No?
She didn't, she didn't like soccer, as they call it.
They're still married,
there.
Right?
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, yeah, they're still married. Yeah, they're on some kind of reality show right now.
Are they? Okay. Yeah.
I've got nothing. David Beckham doesn't interest me at all.
No, me neither. Yeah.
It's probably how people from outside America look at Tom Brady. They're probably kind of like, all right, cool. He's a big deal. I don't get it.
He's a little boring. Yeah. Here's one more from Danica Patrick. She said that she took the relationship when she probably should have gotten out of it. She took it as a challenge.
I would say all the time, I'm built for hard things. I can handle hard things. And so... I just saw it as a hard thing. And I'm like, and the my nature is to try harder and do more. And I was like, what if I don't do it for the right person? Like, what if I just get a stick up my ass about this and just get too proud and like go like, you know what, I'm done. Instead of going, man, just try a little harder. Because, you know, what if you look back and think, man, I wish I would have tried. Like, I never want that in my life. I wish I would have tried. That will never be in my back of my mind. I'm not that. This is probably why I don't have regret. And I don't have shame. Somebody's describing shame being someone not liking who you are, which I told you how much I am myself and how I've done everything that I've wanted to do since I was a kid. So I don't have shame. And I don't have regret because I know that everything leads to the next thing.
Yeah. My advice to kids out there listening to that would be, if you're in a relationship and you're treating it like it's a triathlon, like, you know, I like doing hard things, you know, I like doing things people haven't done before. I would get out of that relationship.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be that way.
No, it doesn't have to be that way.
I can see Aaron Rodgers. Well, think about the way he handled his breakup with the Packers. Remember, like, he would just flat out, he would gaslight. You know, he'd say, like, well, no, they never tried to call me.
Oh,
and
yeah,
and they said, no, well, we tried to call him multiple times. He said, well, I don't have good reception.
Malibu.
And can you imagine trying to break up with somebody who's like that? Oh, you know, like, say you got a girlfriend, and you're like, oh, it's like, I tried to call you last night. And she's like, I didn't see it. No, no, you didn't. Like, no, I'm positive I did right here. No, didn't come through. Can I see your phone? I see my phone call. No, that's a fake number. Yeah, like just no matter what, lie.
The cell phone reception thing in Malibu, where some of the richest people in the world live, who probably need their cell phones at some point.
Yeah,
that was a bad one.
But he went even. It's not like he said we couldn't get in touch with each other or anything. He was caught in a lie, and then he just dismissed getting caught in a lie as, oh, I get bad cell service.
Yeah. Apparently, the two of them, Patrick and Rodgers, Danica Patrick and Aaron Rodgers, met at the ESPYs all the way back in 2012. They didn't start dating till 2018. According to the article that I'm looking at, they kept in touch via email.
Yeah. Like, it's romantic.
But like in the
they
age
both
of,
grew up watching When Harry Met Sally.
I guess
that's how,
yeah,
that's how that generation thinks of romance.
In the age of texting and DMing, like how?
Oh,
like,
wait,
how,
no.
You're thinking
yes,
of
you've got mail.
You're thinking of you've got mail. Yeah, yeah. In the age of texting, the immediacy of texting and DMing, like sending emails and keeping in touch is like putting a note in a bottle and dropping it in the ocean.
I think it's, you can get out more good thoughts in an email. So they
I don't disagree with you.
Maybe
yeah.
they're trying to keep it relatively formal, you know? I am a great admirer of yours.
It's unique is all I'll say. Mm-hmm. Like that's, you don't see that a lot. There's part of me that does admire it. It's just it's wild in this day and age that's how they kept in touch via email, you know?
He's gone out with Shailene Woodley.
That's who
Olivia
I couldn't
Munn,
think of. Yep.
Jessica Soar.
Okay.
Yeah.
Trail of Blood.
Most recently, model Mallory Edens. So that must be the one that doesn't follow football.
Okay. No, it was the Haley one. It was the first one you said. That was the one that doesn't follow football. That didn't follow football.
Shailene Woodley?
Shailene Woodley. Yep. It was her. Yep. She's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Trail of Blood. Aaron Rodgers. Who's in Aaron Rodgers' Trail of Blood? All right. I mentioned the audio. Rob Ninkovich talking about Cole Popovich. Cole Popovich is one of the most important people in the building with the Texans this year. Will this bit of audio get you excited about the change in coaching on the O-line? And we found out who the Texans were targeting when they were trying to move up to 38th in the draft back on day two of the draft. We'll let you know who that is. Jonathan Alexander has it. He's got it confirmed from two sources, and we've got that for you coming up next. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Memorial Day Monday. And yes, big thanks, troops, those who have defended us, given the ultimate sacrifice, their families as well, definitely on a day like today. Thoughts and prayers, no doubt, and a chance to reflect on that. Good to be with all of you on a Monday morning. Appreciate those of you who are up with us here listening today. Here was Rob Ninkovich, former New England Patriot. He was with the Patriots back when Cole Popovich was an assistant coach there. Dante Scarnecchia was the legendary O-line coach in New England at the time, and Cole Popovich was, I guess, sort of his pupil, kind of a coach coaching underneath Dante Scarnecchia. Here's Rob Ninkovich, very complimentary of the Texans' newly promoted offensive line coach.
They had a great assistant coach under Scarnecchia, right? That's Cole Popovich, right? He was the assistant offensive line coach who was here, who in the last 3 years, he left because the whole COVID thing and the mandated. He didn't get vaccinated.
Oh.
Okay.
Right. So if you didn't, because it was a league mandated thing, it wasn't just, hey, the Patriots, it was a league thing. All the coaches and staff had to have it. Well, he didn't feel comfortable with it.
Yeah.
So he.
Smart man.
Left.
So he left.
He left. So then after he leaves, you bring in somebody else and you've had some issues at the offensive line. You bring in another guy that used to play here, but maybe you had one of the best coaches right there
who was with Dante for a long time.
Yes. Yeah. And then he had to leave because.
Yeah. So then it's not really about the talent you have, because if you can get a good coach like Scarnecchia, who basically got Steve Nail off of a wrestling mat and turned him into a great player.
Well, it's a good balance between having a great coach and understanding how do I get the most out of each player?
All right, so there you go. Rob Ninkovich, very complimentary of Cole Popovich right there.
So the thing that people bring up immediately, and understandably so, when we talk about Cole Popovich is, hey, he was the assistant offensive line coach last year. How is he going to fix things? I I've brought up from personal experience, I've seen situations where there were assistant position coaches who were much better than the actual coach, the assistant coach. And, there's only so much you can do. Like, there's just, you're not running the show. It's, you know, like any other organization, you're not the guy in charge. That you can be really, really good at what you do, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're gonna, you know, change everything for the better.
Yep.
And, you know, one of those guys at one point, Steve Marshall was a assistant offensive line coach in 2005 when we were 2-14. And, I thought he was a good coach. And it was, there were a lot of other things wrong with the offense that year systemically that kept him from being as good as he could be. But he went on to, he might still be coaching today, you know, coach for another 20 years in the NFL. So you can't hold it against him that he was part of that bad effort last year, because I don't know how much he actually had a say in.
For that example you just brought up of the coach that you experienced, what did you see in him that told you, like, that he was a good coach? Like, what traits does somebody like that have, especially on a bad team?
I could see him, that he knew what he was talking about on the technique side of things, and I saw him working with guys. And then I think some of it was just in conversation with other offensive linemen, you know, about how the guy knows what he's doing, or he's helped him out and everything.
Yep. That audio, by the way, was on the Greg Hill Show up on WEEI, our sister station up in Boston. Yeah.
Tell you who thinks a lot of Steve Marshall, the offensive line coach, Sean.
Who?
One, Deion Sanders, because Steve Marshall's the O-line coach at
Colorado?
Colorado.
No kidding. Oh, that's cool. Oh, boy, I wonder what that's like.
It was a talent issue, not a coaching issue last year, damn it, Sean.
Yeah.
It was not. I'll not have you drag Steve Marshall's name through the mud.
No. I hadn't even thought about the fact that the offensive line was a scapegoat. I'm just talking about coaching for Deion. Like, that's got to be a crazy experience up there doing that. Jonathan Alexander, speaking of the offensive line, Jonathan Alexander of the Chronicle did a piece on Arianti Urseri this weekend, the offensive lineman that the Texans drafted out of Minnesota in the second round. Seth and I were playing a little guessing game last week because we had seen the clips from Forged in Foxborough, which is the Patriots' internal documentary about the offseason, which included some immersive war room video where you could hear everything pretty much. Not great audio for the radio. The quality wasn't great. But you could definitely hear that the Bears were trying to trade up with the Patriots to move up to the 38th pick in the draft. And the Texans were trying to move up from 58 to 38 as well. The Patriots were fielding offers for that pick. Ultimately, according to this article from Jonathan, they decided, he implies in his article, is the Patriots who opted out of the deal and walked away from it.
Yeah.
It was hard to tell
watching
from the video.
It was confusing. It looked to me in watching the video that it might have been Houston that said they were out, but regardless, however it might be, it ended up, as Jonathan Alexander reported, and he was the first to report anything like this, that the Texans, if they had traded successfully, would have taken Arianti Urseri, who they would ultimately draft 10 picks later.
Yeah.
So you can look at it both ways. You can look at it as, oh, man, that's the guy they really wanted, and they ended up getting it. Or you could also say, well, yeah, but what the hell were they doing even just trying to trade up to 38 when they could have gotten him at 48?
Yeah.
I tend to excuse that second part, because you just flat out never know when a guy's going to be available.
Sure.
I think that Caserio could have drafted or traded up more aggressively at some point. They just waited until they had the right deal in place. So it wasn't like it was come hell or high water, we're going to trade for Arianti Urseri. He bid his time, and he ended up getting an extra third-round pick out of it that they would have traded away if they had taken 38.
It only cost them one third-round pick, whereas moving up to 38 from 58 would have cost them two third-round picks. It would have cost them the exact picks that they used on Jalen Knoll, and then it would have that pick, and then the pick from the third round next year. That's what they used to go get Woody Marks the next day. So, in a way, you know, you're looking at, maybe they find a way to get both those guys anyways, but you got to give up more picks to do it or whatever. But we do know that the 79th pick, which was going to be part of that deal to move up to 38, they did end up using on Jalen Knoll, and that next year's third-round pick was at least part of what they used to go get Woody Marks. So they were able to – it was they were I mean, we got to see all these guys work out, but like they were pretty fortunate that that deal didn't work out, you know?
They were fortunate that deal didn't work out, and you never have a full accounting of the deals that didn't work out. I think the one immediately that a couple people brought up to me when I was kind of just saw this while I was on a live stream was, well, yeah, the one that you wish wouldn't have worked out was when they traded back in the Kenyon Green draft.
Yeah.
Like, who knows? I know if they had been unable to trade back, would they have taken Kyle Hamilton instead of Kenyon Green?
Yeah.
I don't know. That would have been a better move if that deal hadn't worked out and they selected Kyle Hamilton.
They were 13. They let the Eagles flip-flop with them 15 and 13, and Jordan Davis goes 13. Kyle Hamilton goes 14 to the Ravens, and then Kenyon Green goes to the Texans at 15. Yeah. Yeah, they were the ones. It did feel like Kenyon Green just kind of, they like three guys right there, and we'll just take whichever one's left over.
When Nick talks about bands of players,
correct,
that feels like, okay, we've got these three guys graded equally, and we're still in this band, and that's who we'll take. There's almost no way I can't look at that as just a huge mistake by the organization. Whether the deal worked out or whether it didn't, even having Kenyon Green graded the same as Kyle Hamilton, obviously that was a miss.
That was a miss. And the misses happen. That's the way it goes.
I feel better about Ariante Ursary, just given that, okay, they really like this guy that much. But I kind of feel bad for Ariante Ursary, has to find out, like, oh, I could have. Hey, I, yeah. Don't get me wrong, I appreciate this big load of money I'm about to get.
Yeah.
But it would have been even more money 10 picks earlier.
It's definitely like hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, that high in the draft, relatively speaking, you know, compared to the day three guys, that's a lot of money, man. 10 slots, that's a lot of money. Who was more crazy, Olivia Munn or Aaron Rodgers, the texter asks. I don't know Olivia Munn's, not only do I not know her reputation, I can only name one thing that I know she was in. And it was The Newsroom, which was one of the most annoying shows of all time. I hated
that show. She was in that show.
She was in Newsroom.
Oh, I hated that show.
Did you see the? Are you being serious right now? Or are you?
No, I'm being serious. Okay. I watched like two episodes of it.
It's
horrible. Is that Aaron Sorkin?
Yes.
All those Aaron Sorkin shows. Like, nobody talks the way human beings actually talk.
No, it's those cute dialogue.
Walking around giving dramatic speeches all the time.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. Or jokes that are back and forth jokes that would obviously have to be scripted to play out that way. They have seven of them every single show.
That's the worst thing about movies, is that the sick burn. A lot of times in a movie, you get somebody ends a conversation with a sick burn.
Yeah.
And you're like, it wasn't that sick a burn.
Right.
And in real life, that other person could come back with something immediately.
Yeah. No, dude. Sorkin. I watched a full season of it, and I started realizing by like the sixth or seventh episode, I'm like, nobody talks like this. This is unrealistic.
Yeah.
Like, people do
rough.
Not converse like it's rough. Yes, it is rough. So she was in that. So by proxy, she's more crazy than Aaron Rodgers for taking a paycheck to be on a show where she had to listen and be part of that dialogue all the time. She's crazier. Mm-hmm. That's what I say. All right. Into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast. Let's circle back to the Astros. All right. The Astros went 10-7 during this 17-game stretch where they didn't have a single day off. They have a day off today. Finally. What did we learn about this team during the 17-game stretch? We will discuss that coming back.